everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm joined by my equally lovely, amazing, talented co-host, Jazzy, and our guest co-host for this little mini-series we've been doing, Anthony. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello there.
Jazzy, you are back to end our little mini-series after you started it.
Yeah, it turns out when a film series is mostly bad films, I lack so much motivation to go through a marathon.
And yet,
you know, plus I've had a lot going on the last few weeks, so I've had no fucking time.
Jazzy,
it's hard to make time. So, I'll do a little bit of a recap since you weren't here for them. So Anthony, we pretty much shared the exact same opinion for the entire franchise, I think.
I think we're pretty much on the same page with everything, yeah.
We're on the same page with everything. So we think the first film is excellent. Mm-hmm. Exorcist 2 is awful, but awful in a way that's just baffling. So in some ways, the production of it's fascinating, even though it's just terrible. Jazzy, you would have had a bad time.
Except for the part where James Earl Jones is in a locust costume, spits out an apple onto a bed of spikes, and tells Richard Burton to walk on said bed of spikes, which he then in fact does, and it ends painfully.
Good
that day. Happens.
That's yeah, the that thing happens. That happens. That's the thing that happens. Also, a weird moment where it's like a possession thing and someone's literally massaging someone's heart.
That was weird. It was like double possession and double hypnotism at the same time.
Yeah, and they have this device that allows them to look into, like, dream state stuff, and it was very strange.
Yeah, but less Inception and more just watching people, like, roll their eyes into the back of their heads while a light flashes in their eyes.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Then there's Exorcist 3.
Yes, Exorcist 3, which we both agree is actually fantastic, and could be argued that it's the best in the series.
It's on par with the first one.
Yeah, and
I feel like that's the one after this I'm going to end up watching, because I've heard that one's good.
Yeah.
It is good.
It's superb. It's more murder mystery. Sorry, it's more murder mystery than like, demonic possession film. It just so happens there's supernatural elements that result in, and of all of them, it's the one that the most directly fits in with the first film, because it is not really about, it's more about the fallout of events in the first film rather than just here we go again.
And it's also written and directed by William Peter Blatty, so.
Yeah, William Peter Blatty wrote the novel it's based on and directed the film, so. It directly has a direct lineage with the first film in that sense.
And it has Brad Dourif in the film, and
yes,
he's always phenomenal.
That's the other reason I want to watch it, because I don't know if I told
phenomenal.
Y'all, but I got super into the Child's Play / Chucky films like about a year ago, so.
Yeah.
They're great, that's why. I love Chucky. Chucky's great.
Oh, yeah.
And Chucky's now in DVD. Chucky's now in Dead by Daylight as a killer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm excited to play him. I cannot wait. Supposedly also Tiffany's in the game, but I haven't seen
that. I don't
think
they've released her yet, but yeah, Tiffany will be in the game as a skin and will be voiced by Jennifer Tilly.
Oh, my God, I love it. Hell yes.
So that's pretty exciting. And of the clips I've heard of Brad Dourif, looks like he was still giving it his all. It's tricky, you know?
Brad Dourif is the guy you hire if your bad movie needs someone who really understands the bad movie, but really wants to give it his all for the fun of it anyway. Like, he just...
I agree.
He's never bad in movies. Like, he's been in some bad movies, but he's never bad in them, I feel like.
No, he always gives a 10, you know, in terms of his performance. He seems to really give a shit about the craft, to be honest, you know?
And he'll bounce from being like in an Oscar-nominated film to like, or Oscar-winning film in a couple cases, and then just go into be like the cheesiest movies possible. I love it.
basically for Exorcist 3, if you want to see Brad Dourif play a psychotic murderer, and like I know you're thinking like Chucky, but like if Chucky had no winking to the camera, no laughing, no just pure aggression and hate and kind of absolutely terrifying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Chucky without the comedy.
Gotcha.
And then there's Exorcist the Beginning,
which is I don't think it's as bad a film as Exorcist 2. Mm-hmm. I think I would probably watch it more often than I would Exorcist 2.
Yeah.
But it's still like an extremely meh mid film, you know. It's got a lot of really bad CGI.
It's really action movie-fied, too. I mean, that's what happens when you have the guy who made Die Hard 2 make an Exorcist film, an Exorcist prequel. Like, there are entire sequences of violence and action that just do not feel like they fit in this series. It's so over the top. It gets... A guy kills himself after his butterfly collection comes alive. That happens.
Fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's things that happen that are so visually grotesque that, like, they don't, but they have no meaning to you because they'll show you something awful and then just, they'll leave the scene. They'll have someone go like, okay, that's awful. Let's go to this next set piece. And they'll just walk away from this genuinely disturbing visual, but it has, because you leave so quickly, it has no time to linger. And you don't feel
anything. Because you don't really care about the characters. Like, that's the main problem. It's like they don't give you enough to care about that when they show something horrible, you're like, oh, okay.
The only character you care about is Stellan Skarsgård's Marin because, you know, he was in the first film, and that's about it. Not because of this movie. It's just he's in it, so.
I also don't think he was. He's a great actor, but I don't think any of the cast was directed very well.
No,
there's a lot of stale performances, and I'm not blaming it on the actual actors. I think it's a director problem.
Yeah, 100%. But like, even in this film, Dominion, I don't think Stellan Skarsgård holds a candle to the original performance.
No. But let's get on to Dominion, which is a strange film in the series because it's pretty much the beginning. But what if the beginning was actually a lot better?
Yeah, not good.
Still not amazing, but it is a better film.
Yeah,
because so to set the stage, Jazzy, the beginning is kind of like trying in part to be crowd pleasing in some sense, and that. There's more like stuff happening in terms of like action, in terms of like violence. But in trying to have those visuals, it foregoes like any real interesting character dynamics, and the concepts that it has are decent. But watching Dominion, you realize that this was the original film that was intended. It is a much more introspective, film. That is not nearly as visually grotesque and not really scary. It's a lot more about the character's own growth and journey. And a lot of the sequences that they tried to do for the beginning, you can just tell they work a lot better in this original context. Granted, I'm not going to tell you and say it's a great movie that you should go run out to see anytime, but if you had to choose between the two of them, I would go with Dominion because it actually cares about its characters and wants you to as well.
100% agree with that sentiment. The film, and you can tell right away the film opens differently. Like, the beginning opens with, like, this field of corpses and violence and, it's, like, all gore and violence. This opening scene starts with Father Marin basically trying to talk a Nazi out of killing a bunch of innocent people. And it emphasizes the trauma of that scene. And it's a genuinely uncomfortable scene to watch. I hesitate.
The whole scene is about somebody killed one of the Nazis, I believe. And
yeah, something like that.
And this, like, I guess, captain, Nazi captain, is, like, basically forcing Marin, who's a priest, Skarsgård, to tell him who confessed. And Marin doesn't genuinely, I can tell, just doesn't know, really. There was no actual confession. And so the Nazi's just like, you better give me, like 10 name or 10 people that I'm going to kill, or everyone will die. And Marin tries to sacrifice himself at first, but then the Nazi's just like, that's not going to work. And so starts killing, just grabbing people to kill innocent people regardless. So Marin makes the horrible choice of start having to actually name people. Like, he has to point out in the crowd who the Nazis will kill. And that is a big part of his whole journey, and a lot of the reason why the movie starts out with him actually not being a priest. He's kind of but he's also kind of renouncing it.
Yeah, and the beginning has this sequence, but it has it in, like, these fragmented, like, flashbacks that...
Yeah, the beginning has these weird flashbacks that happen that try to explain it, but don't do nearly as good a job as setting it up emotionally and context-wise and make it work.
Do you know what scene I thought of? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead,
Jeff. I was just going to say, so from what I can tell, this other film, the second attempt at this, which is Dominion, right?
Well, Dominion kinda was sorta. The first, but Dominion was the first filmed, but it was the second released, if that makes sense.
Okay, so basically, Beginning was the film that was released first. It was a mess, got panned, and then Dominion came out next, and it was seen as a better cut of the film, though whether or not it's actually good could be up for serious debate.
Well, this also flopped.
Yeah, that's fair.
To be honest,
I was just going to say, this reminds me so much of, like, fucking Batman v Superman. It's not even funny. Like,
100%.
Where, like, the extended cut is better, but it's still just not good. But it is, like, interesting to see what wasn't in the old cut. So
I compare it more.
I would much rather watch Dominion. There's actually a lot of elements of Dominion where I like. I just don't think it's like great on the whole. But there's a lot of, like,
again, it's not the best allegory. It's not the
no,
best.
No, I get what you're saying.
Honestly, it's a good allegory if you compare it to Justice League cut, I would say.
No, yeah, you're right.
I was going to say, you could argue that it's more a case of Justice League, but.
Yeah, I would say 100% like that, actually.
Yeah, I would agree with you with that, yeah.
Yeah, because the plot's the same, but, like, whole chunks of it are refilmed. Like, the whole thing is refilmed, really.
And it feels like a whole movie.
Exactly. Okay. And what's funny about Dominion is it really centers on this trauma, which is one of the things I think works so well. In Beginning, we see Father Marin show up and he's like, oh, I'm not a priest anymore. World War II, it changed me, blah. Yeah, but we don't really get a sense of what happened. We know something involving the Nazis and there was flash cuts to the whole thing, but we don't get a sense of it. But this opening, and you know what it actually really makes me think of a lot of? The beginning of the original X-Men with the concentration camp scene with Magneto.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
This flashback makes me think of that. I think the X-Men scene is a lot better because it really captures pain better. Like, again, this is my problem with Stellan Skarsgård as Marin. And I feel like, again, Stellan Skarsgård is a great actor. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that he plays Marin as very stoic. Even in the face of trauma, you can see the pain in his eyes and all that, but, like, it always feels like a lot's going below the surface. And because of that, nothing comes to the top of the surface. So, like, when you're watching him see these horrible things, and this is genuinely horrible stuff, you don't get the sense that you don't absorb the full weight of his pain.
So, Stellan, you can see it in the way he's performing it in his eyes. He's good. But he's not given a lot of bigger emotional, like, moments of reflection on that and, like, allowed to express it as much. It's like, I mean, it's like a very toxic masculine thing to be like, hold in your pain, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, the closest we get to it is when he meets Rachel, the Jewish, Jewish doctor.
She's a concentration camp survivor.
Yeah, right? Yeah. She has like the seal number in her arms and everything. And they start talking and they engage in that. And it's a lot, very much what they don't say speaks more than what they do say. And again, that's why I think this film was probably canned when they first made it. It's not, especially for 2005, 2004, it's not the standard horror film of that era, which was more in your face, more overt.
No, it does feel different.
It's very subtle. And I think that subtlety works in its favor, but it also doesn't make it an entertaining film to watch. And I think that's where the big issue is, where, and I'll get into this more as we go on, but Exorcist 1 and 3, and to an extent Believer, are very entertaining. You watch them and you're engaged from start to finish. You're like, you're there, you're watching. There's parts where you get on the edge of your seat. Whereas this film, it's very well written, it's very well directed, but because so much of the emotion is below the surface, you never get that sense of like immersion that you would in maybe a lesser written story, but a more bombastic story, if that makes sense. So I see why the film studio was like a little hesitant to release this. It is interesting, but it is also very subdued. It's to its detriment, I feel.
There is something I enjoyed though, in that the actual demonic entity that does come forward, the goal of him in this film is not to necessarily cause ultimate despair, but to sort of promise a fake sense of peace.
100% agree.
Which I found fascinating, because from what I remembered, the way that we viewed Lucifer and stuff has not always, it's not always been this like ultimate despair driven sort of version. It's more like almost kind of like a trickster in a way.
Yeah, well, that's the thing in Jewish folklore, in Jewish religion, in the Bible, in the Torah, in the Old Testament. Satan is seen not as the ultimate evil. He's seen as temptation. He's seen as the adversary in a sense, but not as an evil adversary. He's friendly with God. He's on speaking terms with God. He just pushes people to their limits to test their faith and resolve. And honestly, in some sects of Christianity, he's even seen that way too, as a temptation, not necessarily as evil. Because he's not really evil if you look in the book of Job. He's just pushing the buttons one by one to see how far resolve goes. And in this film, the demons, I'm assuming it's Pazuzu again, because, you know, Pazuzu in the first film knows who Marin is. And the implication that scene in Iraq is that Marin has seen this demon before specifically. With the character of Cheech, right? It's Cheech, the character, the boy's name?
Yes.
He's like this, you know, he's had a hard life. Like he's been injured. He has these developmental and physical disabilities. And when the demon possesses him, he actually gives Cheech, like he tries to help Cheech in a way, but in a way that kind of removes and strips his autonomy. And there's a sense of it's really disturbing. And when the demon is exorcised, ultimately, he regresses. So it's this weird kind of dynamic where it's like the demon is giving him, I don't want to say an easy way out because that sounds very like ableist, but he's giving him everything he wants in a time when he couldn't get that otherwise, without like the charity of like the British colonizers who are in the area. So it's very interesting how they play with that. I don't know if there is any message there is the problem. I feel like they show that and it's up to the audience to kind of draw what they feel about that. And I wonder if that's, I don't know. That's my perspective anyway.
Do you remember where it's at country-wise?
It is set, I know it's in Africa. I think it's in, Turkana, which is in Kenya. So,
okay.
I believe it's, yeah, so Turkana. Better than like in Exodus 2 where it's just in Africa, you know Africa, yeah. Of course, where Africa is, you know, the whole country
of
Africa.
I also appreciated that they really did emphasize, in addition to that, the, again, how evil the British colonizers are.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I appreciate how in both films they say, yeah, the British are awful. I feel this film does a less both sides thing than Beginnings did, which I prefer, again, about this film.
Yeah,
the first film was too much like, you know, both sides of this colonizing effort were bad. Like, no, the British were awful. The British are terrible. So, I mean, the British colonized. If you have any British listeners, I don't think you personally are terrible, but your country has done a lot of awful stuff. So is mine, but like.
No. Yeah, no, it's genuinely awful. But I do think that it is a, I still think that it's a much better, film than if I had told someone, if they were going through the series like we did, I would say skip the beginning.
Easily.
Because you don't need it.
What do you think about the diaper baby scene, essentially, which is what I referred to, which is basically like the whole exorcism at the end. It's like the finale of.
I liked the idea of temptation being the main sort of context of that, and I actually think that whole section is pretty well written. I just don't think it's executed in a way visually that's great.
No, I agree. It's very odd. I think it's a very strange sequence, and I think it's weird how
if it was filmed differently, it would be better.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, because it's like I said, I like the idea of like the demonic entity, which we can assume is Pazuzu, but also the film doesn't say, which I think is probably a smart approach.
Well, they do say at the end that the demon will pursue Marin.
So you can't assume.
Yeah, so I mean, we know that Pazuzu in the first film was really, he kept mentioning Marin. So we can sense this is probably the same demon that, you know, is in this film.
So it's kind of establishing history between the two, like just to have a function as a prequel to the original.
100%.
100%. Right.
Exactly,
yes,
that.
100%,
whereas beginning, it felt like it didn't make sense why the demon would pursue Marin. Because in the beginning, the demon gets exactly what it wants. Like, it gets its massacre. Whereas in this, Marin manages to stop him. Which, honestly, let's actually give credit where credit's due. This is the first and only time in the series so far where the exorcist process actually exorcises the demon.
That's true. It's the only...
It never works otherwise. Like every other movie, it doesn't work.
God, for a film titled The Exorcist, these fucking exorcisms don't have a good success rate.
Honestly, no. It's the worst, though, is in the next film we're going to talk about. That is the worst case of, like, demonic possession exorcism. We'll get to it. We'll get to Believer.
I can't wait.
It's like here's the thing. I like Believer quite a bit more than some people did. But,
yeah. Same.
I think it was a lot of fun. But in terms of six happy endings, this is like the bleakest. I would say this is probably the bleakest ending of the series, more so than Beginning, because I just didn't feel anything towards any human being in that movie.
True. Yeah.
But it frames it like the most happy ending, which is bizarre.
I mean, okay, do you want to... So, Jazzy, you're totally cool with us spoiling Believer. I think we should get into that.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. It's not a movie I was exactly... Like, I'll talk about the horror movie I was hyped to see this year after you guys are done, because I really want to talk about it. So
heck yeah, I'll talk about the horror movies this year. Are you kidding? I love horror movies.
So let's get the Believer this, fairly
Exorcist
quickly.
Exorcist Believer doesn't have a puppet, so I'm uninterested.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So I think y'all know what I'm going to talk about.
Yes,
I know you're talking about.
You're
I recommend you not spoil because I haven't seen it, but yes.
You're clearly talking about Talk to Me, Jazzy. I understand. It's okay.
Indeed.
I heard it's great. That you got I haven't me. Seen it.
Actually, that one is pretty good. You should watch Talk to Me. It's actually really good.
So on to Exorcist Believer. I texted you the other day. I was just like,
yes,
I kind of liked Believer. Like, I know it got like 20-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm just like, okay, I'll brace myself for what I got. And I'm just like, this is way better than like most of the sequels.
Yeah, like, agreed.
It's
fun.
No Exorcist 3, but it's like, it has characters you care about. It's fairly well directed, and it continues the original film fairly well in interesting directions. It's got some like really interesting choices. I'm not saying it's perfect at all, but
I enjoyed it.
But it's still like a pretty decent movie. Like I walked away going like, wow, this is way better than I expected.
I will say this: the critical response. Okay, so this has been the year of I don't agree with critics on half the films I've seen. I'm not going to get into my feelings in the Marvels because that's a whole other discussion. That'll sidetrack what we're talking about right now. Or Five Nights at Freddy's, but like, at least not yet. But like, Exorcist Believer getting 20% baffles me because like, there are way worse horror films that came out this year that got better reviews.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, I mean, it was never boring. And I think the first half of this film has some really good bits. And, you know, the thing about the first Exorcist that I think was so good was that it captured the fears of a parent knowing something is wrong with their kid, but not being able to address it. And I feel this film got that memo and tried to work with that in the first half with one of the parents. I think the other set of parents is just – so I will say it's the dad of the one girl I thought was the best part of the whole movie. Like the main character, the main dad.
What, you mean Leslie Odom Jr.'s character?
Yes. Yeah. He was fantastic. And the whole movie, I'm on his side. I'm like, no, you are the only sane person in the room.
He's a good person. He's sane. He's like kind. Like he's obviously grieving.
And what's funny is, you know, when the movie first came out, I do want to address this now because it will tie in with what I feel about the movie with critics. There was a review that came out, I think IndieWire put it out, where they said the film was anti-abortion, that it was a pro-life movie. I have no idea what that guy was talking about. And when I watched it with my spouse, and I went to my spouse and went, you know, I told them, you know, this article said this and that was this. And they're like, what? If anything, it's the opposite opinion. Like, you know,
it's very much not a pro-life, like, anti-abortion thing. It just has that.
I always find it funny when like folks on either side of the political spectrum try to insist a meaning that just isn't there in the movies. Like you're saying people saying this movie was apparently pro-abortion. I remember people where there was like a small but vocal subset of people saying the same thing for that Pixar movie Soul that came out a couple years ago. So.
Yeah, yeah. But this does address
like,
abortion. Like abortion is directly referenced, but not in a way where it takes a side on it necessarily, but it also doesn't condone it, which I guess is – it doesn't condemn it, which I guess is condoning it. There are two instances. One's very overt, and a woman says, you know, I was trained to be a nun, but then I got pregnant and I decided to abort the baby, and I felt like I couldn't be a nun having done that because I broke my vows, so I became a nurse instead. And everyone's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then they just never mention it ever again, except for the demon who uses that to emotionally torment her. But it's a demon saying it, so, you know, you can accept. That's
demon's
probably
a bad one.
You know, he's the bad guy. He's probably not the
best.
Right,
there is context to consider here, like.
Exactly. The other thing, though, and this is the part that a lot of critics were referencing, the beginning of the movie takes place during an earthquake. That was actually a real earthquake that took
place. In Haiti,
yeah. And, the main character, his wife dies in the earthquake. And the doctors are like, listen, we can save your wife or the baby inside of your wife. And we can't save both. We can only save one. Like, if we rescue the baby, it'll kill your wife. If we save your wife, it'll kill the baby. You have to choose one. And we don't know what his answer is until the end of the film, but I guess, you know, spoilers. He says, immediately, save my wife. However, the wife still dies, and the baby lives. And so that influences everything you know about the character, because it's like, the whole movie, he's like super protective of his daughter. He's, you know, he's very loving as a father. And you know that guilt of choosing his wife over his daughter initially is playing into his mind.
You also know that it is very grieving over her, considering that there's a scene where his daughter picks up a scarf that's from, starts to wear a scarf that's from her mother. And his reaction to that's kind of like almost, he's not mean, right? But he definitely feels like very protective. So you were going through her stuff, you know? So there's still a lot there. And of course the demon plays on this concept that supposedly, which is not true, that he doesn't care about his daughter.
And that's the thing also. It's a case of the demon messing with their guilt. And I think that works really well. I think my biggest issue with the film is the other set of parents. So, Jazzy, just so you understand, this film has two girls who are possessed, not just one. They both, you know, go into the woods. They try doing a seance to talk to the dead mom. They disappear, and they reemerge like 3 days later in like a barn somewhere. And when they take them to the hospital, they realize, okay, there's nothing wrong with them. They weren't on drugs. I guess they just are fatigued and exhausted, lost track of time, you know, something. Maybe they were just so traumatized by being lost, they just blocked out chunks of their memory from that period.
Yeah, they think it was only a few hours.
Yeah, they think it's a few hours. Exactly. When they ask them how long we got there, they're like, oh, you know, a few hours. And they're like, no, it's been like 3 days. But of course, they're really possessed by demons.
Or one demon could be.
Two. One demon. Exactly. And the demon is not really Pazuzu this time. Actually, which is crazy. It's not Pazuzu. No. It's some other demon that I don't know how this demon fits in with the Exorcist mythology, but it exists, and it seems to be more powerful than Pazuzu, I'd say, in some respects, because one demon possessing two girls, that's already powerful, but he does some stuff in the physical world that's like a little intense, considering what Pazuzu chose to do in the physical world.
Yeah, Pazuzu was probably stronger than what he said. He said that would be a vulgar display of power, so.
Yeah, he just chose not to use his power. He just wanted to do one specific thing, and that was cause despair. This demon is like actively going, no, I'm going to kill you all. I'm just going to kill you guys.
And I'm going to enjoy it while you suffer, you know.
Yeah, which is intense. That's wild to me. Though I do think everything happened. But it's funny because the film, it really rides or dies based on how much you care about the parents of these kids. And I did not care for the white girl's parents, like, at all. In fact, from square one, I was just so done with them. I just couldn't stand
them. I didn't mind her mother.
I couldn't stand either of them. They both annoyed me so much. I was like, oh, God, people. But the dad especially.
The mom got all right. I also found it interesting that the film sort of plays on the kind of concepts of, like, multiple types of religion or spirituality all lead to the same sort of conclusion.
I do agree with that.
We do get an exorcism sequence in the end of the movie. I think where your frustrations with those parents lead strongest, but they do agree. to an exorcism, but it kind of like is the church officially says no to it. So they just decide to say fuck it and go with it because they realize that's the only way that they have. So they have, like sort of like different spiritual, like it was like a fundamentalist Christian or like sort of Protestant Christian preacher, right? And then it was like the spiritual healer.
I think they were doing, I think it was, they were doing hoodoo, honestly, it looked like.
Hoodoo? Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they decided to like combine all their like sort of concepts to try and do it themselves. Again, these are people who've never done it before, which makes that scene interesting too in that regard. Cause they're just trying to will it more so than like 100% certainty that it will work, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like they didn't go far enough with it. I feel like they should have gotten, like, some Shinto priests in there.
Yeah,
like
a Buddhist priest. If they do a sequel, they should do that again. They should do that sort of concept. But it's an interesting concept to start off, but it's not just a sort of a Catholic perspective on it.
I do think it's weird how they use Chris McNeil, though. That was weird.
You mean her inclusion in the film?
Yeah, I don't understand why they brought her back beyond like just the fact they wanted to bring her back in the film because she doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like
she does give emotional context to Leslie Odom Jr.'s character though.
Yeah.
And the idea of like parent. So I can understand that perspective because that film is, I didn't think it was a scary movie, which is not a slight against it. I actually think it's a much more, emotional film. About sort of the concept of grief and like and parental like love.
I think there was one scene that I think I found really upsetting, but I'll get to that later. It's towards the end. Like a scene that's upsetting, but like it's glossed over very quickly, and I'm like, that's really messed up. But I'll get to that later.
So yeah, Reagan's mom, Chris, comes back. They explain that she wrote a book which drove Reagan away from wanting to really have a relationship with her. And she does confront the demon in a scene. She's not in it a whole lot. She's just a lot more given to like context to the broader universe in addition to like an emotional connection for like a parental thing. She is blinded by the demon, like literally stabbed in the eyes.
The demon gouges her eyes out with like a knife. And I'm like, what?
I think it was the crucifix.
Oh, it was a crucifix? I'm sorry. It was a crucifix. You're right.
Yeah.
But I find it funny like how it's like the whole time
she doesn't die. By the way,
she lives. But it's like it's funny because she says the whole time, "I'm not an exorcist. I don't understand why the priests didn't want me in the exorcism process." And she goes to like exorcise the demon and gets her ass kicked in like 5 seconds. I'm like, "What did you think was going to happen?" Like,
see, this is something I noticed. Like, this is something I noticed right away when I saw the trailers for this movie, and why I was just completely uninterested from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that they want. David Gordon Green and his creative team clearly want to try and recapture the same lightning in a bottle that Halloween 2018 had.
Mm.
Where it's like, oh, we're bringing back this legacy character to go up against the monster. And it's like, does anyone care about the rivalry between the mom and the devil? Like, on at least the same level as, like, Laurie Strode and Michael Myers?
I think it's also hard to, you know, with The Exorcist, when you go through the whole series, you realize the biggest rivalry was with Marin and the demon. And Marin dies in the first film. I mean,
that also could be a Universal Pictures sort of idea, right? Like, they're the ones that are, like, producing the film. I'm sure they want the legacy character to be in it because they know it'll bring in more crowd. And I feel like David
This is what I noticed with Gordon Green's film specifically, because he had the same problem with the sequels to Halloween 2018, where the only point of those sequels is to try and recapture what people liked about 2018.
Well, I mean, I disagree. I think Halloween Kills and Ends has a very interesting discussion about how trauma can impact the community.
I do think it does try to do something. So I don't think the Halloween sequels are like amazing, but I gotta give them some respect that those films did try to have something to say. a little bit more than what you would expect.
I was going to say, I don't think Kills had much to say, and I think Ends had something to say, but what it said was gibberish.
I think I like Ends more than most people did, but I also think that Ends is a very confusing movie for me to think about, because, like, there are things it does that I like a lot, and other things I find baffling. Like, some choices that they went with, I'm like, that's really clever. And other times I'm like, that's really strange.
This teenager accidentally killed a child completely without malice. It was a complete accident. He has the same evil Michael does.
I think it would be making more sense if we say that they create their own monsters. But the thing with Michael Myers is he's meant to be just pure evil. He's meant to be unexplainable, intangibly cruel. And
right,
like,
but the problem is, even before the kid starts doing bad things, they're trying to present this idea that he has the same evil as Michael. And that's where I think the problem of that movie and what would otherwise be an interesting premise falls flat. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was watching it with a group of friends when I first watched Halloween Ends, and there was just a point during this film where I was so infuriated by everything it was trying to say with no foundation that I suddenly just yelled out of nowhere, this movie is an idiot.
Well, I will say this.
No one is making the movies an idiot. They made an idiot movie.
I will say this. I think Halloween Ends is better if you look at it as a Christine movie. But the problem is they don't do the legwork to establish that Michael Myers is somehow, like, sending his evil into Corey. Like, if they did that, if they made that more explicit, I think that'd be much more compelling of a movie, that evil can, like, transfer or
potential corrupt. I thought the idea was that the potential for evil is, like, present in, like, everyone and based, like, upon trauma. Like, because, like, a lot of that,
like,
film
I said,
is
I like
sort
the
of
idea.
Dealing with.
Go ahead. Like, yeah, I like the idea of the town creating a new monster in the form of Corey by just basically kind of molding him into one based on how ostracized he is. Because I totally get why he's ostracized. Accident or not, that's not a good look. I totally get that.
100% agree.
That's not my problem with the movie. I like the idea of, like, ostracizing this kid would turn him, like, into something ugly. I get that idea. I like the idea. The problem is the movie's too stupid to work with it.
My big issue also is that you have Michael Myers established as this unstoppable monster in the last two films, and they never take the time to go, hey, you know, maybe his injury's caught up to him. Maybe he's just an old man now. They just kind of go, okay, he's been in the sewers for, like, 4 years. That's just where he's been. That's his home now. He's living in the sewers.
He's renting the space out from Pennywise.
Is Pennywise now an Airbnb owner? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
I will tell you, we're going to go back to the whole fear clown thing.
Oh my goodness.
I was going to say that compared to Kills and Ends, Believer feels a little bit more straightforward than those two films and how they approach things.
Until we get to the end, which I have issues with personally, which I've told you my issues with the ending.
Tell me, how did the ending hurt you? I want to know.
So, Jazzy, let me set the scene for you. We have the Exorcist Avengers. You know, we've got the Protestants,
we've got the Catholics,
we've got the Hoodoo guys, we got the Naturalists, we got the ex-nuns, we got all of them together in a room, and they have a whole big complex ritual. The church says, you're not allowed to do this thing, and they're like, by God, we'll do it anyway. And they strap the two girls down, and their hearts are synchronized for some reason, because demons, and they do all these things, each thing wilder than the last, and none of it seems to be helping. Until the demon comes out and goes, parents, it's time for you guys to get involved. You have to choose. I'm going to let one of these girls live, and one of these girls are going to die. And you have to choose. And this again establishes, hey, oh, and by the way, they killed the Catholic priest.
The Catholic priest was outside and he had to deliver the bad news that he couldn't join, but then he just said screw it and he went in anyway.
And he died.
And then he was trying to help them, but they do the
sounds
head
like
turn
a very
around,
engaging character.
His head goes 180.
His head gets turned around like the they do that, but they show his head crack and he dies.
No one else has this happen to them, just the Catholic priest. It's like the demon could do that. He just chooses not to, I guess.
I think he hates the Catholics the most.
Yeah, he does not like those guys. So,
thought of a really bad joke I could have made regarding the fact that it's always the Catholics.
Yeah, right? Well, there's several bad jokes.
There's a valid reason.
Totally. So the parents have said, he tells parents, you have to choose. And our main guy and the other girl's mom, they're both like...
Probably one of the best characters in the movie.
Exactly. They're both like, I can't choose. I'm not going to choose. And Demon's trying to pull the tricks to make him go. And the other girl's dad, the white girl's dad, just comes in and shouts, I choose you, daughter. And the demon, because it's a demon and an asshole, decides, okay, you choose your daughter. Okay. I didn't tell you this much, but what I was asking you was who I'm going to kill. I'm going to kill your daughter.
Oh.
I'm going to save the other daughter. So it's like a trick. But the demon doesn't just kill the daughter. We cut to the
They
to
show
the
this pretty horrific scene, actually.
It's
like,
genuinely the worst. It's the most horrific scene in the movie, I think. And what makes it worse is that no one else ever acknowledges what just happened and the full implications of how horrifying this is.
You see the white girl's daughter. I did tell you that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name, but yes. The white girl, she's in some sort of, she's basically in the drainage sort of pipe where initially they were doing that seance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she is literally pulled into hell by demons.
Yeah, by like a bunch of demons just reach out of the water and just drag her to hell. And like, it's horrifying. And you do see these like snippets of genuinely horrific looking demon. I think when you look at the demon makeup for like out of context, it's almost endearing looking. But like in snap cuts of it, it looks horrifying.
Yeah, they just do flashes of it. They don't like show you like straight up a shot of a demon. It's more like these flashes of arms and like horns and fire and like it's very quick.
And yeah, gnarled teeth. It's a genuinely horrifying scene. And what makes it worse is
horrifying implications because she's an innocent. Yeah.
And it's not like she's dying. She's in hell. Like, it's not just simply, Jason killed a kid, but they're dead. Like, no, it's implying that the spirit is now suffering in hell for eternity because the dad's a dipshit and didn't freaking hold the line against the demon.
And also believe that what the demon would say would be true.
Exactly.
The demon is, of course, a demon, and somebody did the opposite. So Leslie Odom Jr.'s character, his daughter, survives, even though we had a moment of, like, where you thought she was dead, but she survived. They do that thing where, like, you think she's dead, but then she comes back, which I got to give credit to Leslie Odom Jr., who played that scene very well. It's very emotional when it happens because you do think she's dead,
He is the best part of this movie. Consistently, he is like, he holds the movie on his freaking back. he is incredible in this film. But what annoys me so much about this movie and holds me back from like really loving it as much as some of the other films in the series, is that ending monologue. By the one lady who's almost a nun, where, right. You have the happy music swelling going on, and she's saying, God tests us, and we're able to, like, if we're able to pull through this pain, it's a sign of us having faith and being, whatever she's saying. Meanwhile, the other girl's in hell because of no fault of her own, and, like, no one is acknowledging how horrifying that concept is. I mean, granted, they don't know that the girl died, but, like, the way the movie is framed, it neglects to even question what happened to this poor girl.
I'm really glad I didn't see this movie then, because I can guarantee you that's like just that scene would probably piss me off to the point where I'd call the movie complete trash. Like,
yeah, it was because the movie up until that point, it actually works. I think the Avengers of exist is a little cheesy until you acknowledge, well, they all failed. So, I mean, you know, it's going with the tradition that in exorcism films up until this point where the exorcism doesn't actually save the person who's being possessed. I still think the best solution was Exorcist 3 with the possession solution.
I understand how that sort of framing you didn't like. It didn't bother me as much, mainly because I just felt it was sort of a way to temper the audience's reaction to something horrific to prepare yourself for when that's addressed in the sequel, because they are planning a trilogy of these films. So to me, it didn't bother me as much because it is not like, if that was just the end of the film, I think I'd be really frustrated. Like if this was the only film that they were planning to do, but the fact that I know that this is a planned trilogy of things doesn't bother me as much because the story's not over. You know,
agreed.
I was just like, well, it's okay, it's whatever. You know, there is one surprise at the end though, and I was actually so surprised that no one spoiled it for me.
Yeah, the fact that Linda Blair showed up.
So Jazzy, Linda Blair does show up in the film, considering
Queen, right there.
It's amazing considering how she's been vocally against the series for as long as she has, for very obvious reasons. So yeah, you see one before the credits roll, you see one final shot of Chris in the hospital room with her eyes bandaged up. And then because earlier they explained that Chris hadn't seen Reagan in years and didn't even know where she was, Reagan shows up to her hospital room and they hug. And it's a very actually touching moment. The way that, and the fact they got Linda Blair to do it is pretty good.
Like, yeah. And that leaves me
thinking, I was shocked. I was just like, what?
And that makes me think they're going to bring her into more of this, of the sequels when they come out. Cause probably. Like, I feel like of all the characters aside, you know, unfortunately, most of the actors involved with the original film have passed on since then. But yeah. Reagan is the one exception. Like Linda Blair is the one person who, if they put her front and center, I feel like that would get a lot of butts in the seat, in the theater. Way more than her mom, I think. As even though, you know, Ellen Burstyn is an incredible actress, I think that her performance in Requiem for a Dream is one of the most heartbreaking performances of any movie ever. But Linda Blair is way more associated with this franchise than Ellen Burstyn is.
And credit where credit's due, Ellen Burstyn does a good job of her performance.
She did a great job. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great. She plays the character well. Her emotional moments are really, like, moving because, again, she's a talented actress who can deliver it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the thing is also, like, I feel a lot of people dismiss this film when it came out because they wanted to go, oh, it's just a franchise film, it's garbage, you know, blah. But, like, there's a lot to this film that's interesting and worth discussing. I don't think
I do think it's worth a watch. But if you're not interested, you're not interested, you know?
Like I said, just based on what I'm hearing of just the ending, that sounds like I would just be genuinely pissed off. And I try not to watch films that anger me.
That's fair. I think the film works when it works, but when it doesn't work, it just annoys me. But that still makes it better than most of the films in this series.
It's true.
I'm kind of glad I ended up not being able to do this marathon, because this sounds like an annoying venture. Like, I am kind of, I do not envy either of you.
Well, you did miss three.
There are two great films in the series, and everything else ranges from bad to fun.
Can I talk about the horror film I've been excited to talk about?
I think so.
Yeah, I was trying to get us to that.
Before we do that, Jazzy, we'll ask Crystal one thing. Mm-hmm. How would you rank these films?
Do you want to rank them or rate them out of like 10?
Let's rank them. Let's both rank them. Let's bounce back between two numbers. Make it quick.
So very quick. Favorite film in the franchise is the first film.
Same.
Second favorite and very close like maybe even is part three.
Same.
Then it would be Believer.
Okay, same.
And then honestly, I would probably do Dominion Beginning, then two.
Same, same, same. Okay, good. We're on the same page. All right, Chazzy, what do you say?
Okay, so while I wasn't into that, I did watch a new horror film that came out this year that I've kind of avoided talking about in solidarity with the strike. I kind of avoid talking about a lot of movies due to the strike, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once the strike reached a tentative end, I kind of just did a whole ass fucking thread talking about shit I couldn't talk about, so. So anyway, Saw X.
X.
Socks. You mean socks.
Socks, yes, my favorite. So, I don't know if I've ever said this on this podcast. I probably have, but I am a massive fan of the Saw franchise, but not because I think a lot of the movies are good. The Saw franchise is a pure popcorn horror film for me. Like, I enjoy them because they're dumb, and I like, and the appeal of it to me, similar to something like Fast and Furious and Kingdom Hearts, isn't necessarily because I think the story's high art, but because the story's so batshit insane, I'm always curious where it's going. Like, what new dumb shit are they going to introduce that it's going to complicate this timeline further?
Oh, God, Jazzy, yeah. maybe that should be our miniseries. You know, we should do a Saw marathon.
If we do a Saw marathon, like, anytime, even if it's not Halloween, I would so be up for that.
Yeah, count me on that one, too, honestly. I will be down for
that.
Let's
plan for that. I've only ever seen the first two films, so.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. So to talk about Saw X, I'll talk about it briefly, because I'm not going to spoil anything, keep in mind.
I want to see it still.
Yeah, so before going to see Saw X, my ranking of the films from best to worst went 1-6. Spiral, 4. Let me try that again. I'm mixing up numbers.
Okay.
1-6, Spiral, 2-4, Jigsaw, 5-3, and 3D.
Really? 3 that low, huh?
Yeah, I know I'm in a huge minority with that, but I fucking hate Saw 3.
I would rank, I'm curious, how come?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because the reason why I hate Saw 3 kind of goes into one of my praises for Saw X, but Saw 3, I think, is a movie that made so many mistakes and did so much wrong that it kind of brought, that kind of, and to the point that it's such an instrumental entry is frustrating. I think the main character, Jeff, is one of the most infuriating characters in the series, because he lacks agency.
He sucks.
He lacks any sense of urgency. I hate what they did to my girl Amanda. Everything about her was character assassination.
That's valid.
I think the movie takes forever to find focus because, like, the first, like, 20 minutes of this movie can't make up its mind on who the protagonist is.
Well, there was the one cop, the one lady cop, whose name eludes me.
Yeah, it was the lady cop, which I was kind of interested considering she was in the first two films in minor roles, and it's like, oh, okay, this would be cool, but then they kill her off.
Yeah, horribly, I might add.
My only praises for Saw 3 are, like every Saw movie, I think Tobin Bell did fantastic as Jigsaw. I think the traps are great. I think, like, some of the traps are some of my favorites. Like, the rack was fucking brutal, and I loved it.
Yeah, the rack is pretty intense. I like the rack. But anyway, I think three, you may have noticed,
Saw 3 has a, yeah, and the ending's neat, I guess, though I think it's stupid and much, and again, emblematic of the fact that Jeff is a fucking terrible character. So.
Jeff's a moron. Jeff's an idiot.
I fucking hate
you. It's like,
I'm
you
fucking,
can kill me or forgive me.
In fact, my favorite part of Saw 4 is the fact that they introduce Strom, who's one of my favorites in the series, and he just fucking shoots Jeff.
That is very cathartic, I will say that. That is one of the most cathartic
scenes. Yeah, especially since
scenes.
I really like Strom. I could go on of why I think, like, Saw 4 is extremely underrated, but I digress. I'll wait until we do a marathon. Anyway, that's my ranking. I'd say the first was initially my favorite because it's a well-made, well-crafted thriller that I always enjoy watching, and I always find myself, like, super into what's going on, even though I know everything that happens. 3D is my least favorite because 3D is a misogynistic pile of shit that needs to burn.
Yeah, 3D just sucks.
Like, I have never found a, like, you want to talk about movies that make me angry? Saw 3D actively pisses me off.
I think, for me, the bottom is Saw 3D, then 5. I'm not a fan of 5 all that much.
5, I like the stuff with Strom. I like some of the, like, explanations on why Hoffman's the way he is. But I don't really like anything else or the fact that Tobin Bell's barely in it.
Yeah, 5 just feels like a weird transition film to me. Like, I have no strong feelings about it, which is one of the reasons why I feel the least passionate about it.
It's a very middle-of-the-road Saw film for me. But anyway, so that was my ranking before seeing Saw X. Now that I've seen Saw X, it is my favorite. And I say that, no irony, no gotcha that I'm going to have at, like, afterwards saying, haha, fooled you, it's actually bad. No. Saw X was fucking great.
Reviews were that in your high? Favor. The reviews were the yes. highest of the whole series, by the way.
Yes, and I agree. I agree with that assessment. It is so goddamn good. It took them 10 films, but they finally realized, hey, people really like Tobin Bell. Let's just make him the main character. Let's make him the focus. And to me, that strengthened the film considerably. Because Tobin Bell's always been the best part of these movies. Like, he is the one consistent phrase people will have if they're marathoning the series for every film except Spiral, where he's not in the movie, he's just a photo on the wall.
Yeah, well,
I think Spiral...
It's still acting.
Yeah, but he's still one of the best parts of Spiral, and I'm one of those few weirdos that liked Spiral, but...
Yeah, Spiral had mixed feelings on. As you were, sorry.
But anyway, so... I liked the focus on him for most of this movie, and this isn't really a spoiler, but for, like, most of this movie, for, like, the first third, there's not really any trap sequences, barring a half of one, I'll say.
Mm.
Like, most of the first third of this movie focuses entirely, if you've seen the trailer, you know a big part of it is, this takes place between Saw 1 and 2, and it's focusing on John Kramer, a.k.a. Jigsaw, going for an experimental treatment for his cancer that, due to reasons of this being a prequel, it are not going to pan out well. It's going to be a scam and everything. And you know this from the get-go.
Yeah.
But what makes that part of the film so good is not necessarily, like, the suspense on if this worked, because that's not there. What makes this work is that this is the first Saw movie where I feel we really get a sense of who John Kramer is. A lot of films have shown the stuff that's happened to him and why he's Jigsaw, but I think this film, fascinatingly, kind of shows us some perspective of how he sees his work, why he thinks it's necessary. And there's a great scene that, like late into this first third that I'm not going to spoil, but this great scene that's done completely without dialogue that really, I think, speaks volumes of for the character. And if we do the Saw Marathon, that's going to be, like, one of my favorite scenes to talk about.
I think we should, because I think we should do Saw because you love that. And I think we need to do Nightmare on Elm Street for Lizzie.
Oh, hell yeah. But yeah, so...
That'd be fun. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. The star of the show is definitely Tobin Bell. He does a great job. This is probably my favorite performance I've seen from him ever, not just in the Saw films. He really does get into the center of what makes this character tick, and he makes for a surprisingly compelling lead. I was also very happy to see Shawnee Smith return as Amanda, and oh god, redemption for Amanda! This completely made up for the character assassination in Saw 3. I feel vindicated.
Well, I feel like Saw 6 also helped compensate for that too, you know?
Yeah, but this is like the first film since Saw 3 where she has a lot of focus. In Saw 6, her role was mainly in flashbacks to help kind of give context to a specific event in John Kramer's life.
True. That makes sense.
I know a lot of people have pointed out that that it's a bit distracting that Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith look much obviously older than they do in films that take place after this. But I'm actually happy that's the case, because I hate de-aging so much, and I'm glad that we're just allowed to have their performances unhindered.
Agreed. But Jazzy, what are you talking about? Amanda lives in the Saw movies. She's hanging out in, like, you know, the other world with the Trapper and the Wraith, just picking people off in, like, an other dimensional field where she's the pig.
Sure, why not?
That's a Dead by Daylight reference for anyone who didn't get that.
I know. Anyway, I thought the traps were great. They were pretty fucking brutal, but also insanely memorable. And I like the fact that because all these people are in this trap because they participate in this scam, none of the reasons the characters are in traps feel petty or dumb like they tend to in Saw. Because in some of the Saw sequels, some of the reasons certain characters are in traps are dumb.
Yeah, agreed. You were the witness, like, of a car accident, and you didn't say anything at the right time. Therefore, you'll die a horrible death.
Therefore, you get
freezing.
To die. No. Everyone feels justified in why they're in these traps. So, and because these characters are such horrible people, and we're focusing on Jigsaw, it's probably the first time in the series where I was actively rooting for him.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
Which is the biggest shock, because I love these movies, but Jigsaw can be one of the most infuriating fucking people based on how his morals are just, what are you doing, man? Like,
yeah, Jigsaw, I always find it funny with the Saw series, and this is, like, mind you, a general statement blanket, that Jigsaw, it's funny how the fans, like, sometimes will be like, no, Jigsaw is totally in the right. He's justified in doing what he does. But I'm like, no, he's just murdering people. Like, I mean, he can flower it up as much as he wants, but, like, until, like, the later films where he's taken out, like, you know, and I think Saw 6 is a really good job with, like, having people you really just want to see get punished by Jigsaw.
Right. Like, right, that film, was the last film where that, like, that was the last film where that felt like that in terms of, like, Jigsaw, so.
Agreed.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I will say Jigsaw, the movie also, not Jigsaw, what was it? Spiral also had some victims who were truly, like, you can kill them. I don't care. You know
I was
going to
say, like, Jigsaw did too. In fact, like, the main lady is in the trap. I won't spoil, but she's easily one of the most despicable fucking human beings they put into one of these things.
That is also true. But I think Spiral, like, to me personally, like, I didn't like Spiral all that much, but I think, like, at least watching it, I'm like, no, I think. You have a point, bad guy. You who's not Jigsaw. You have a point.
You have a good point, Diet Jigsaw.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't like you too much, but, like, I can't argue that. I can't say I'm upset you got away with everything.
Right. But, yeah, so, like I said, the performance from Tobin Bell is definitely the biggest thing that worked. I like the traps, and I like the fact that it's all despicable fucking people this time. But even though they're despicable, they're still interesting characters, which I thought was neat, because that doesn't happen a lot in Saw movies, where, like, the victims are just as interesting as the killer, so.
Agreed.
Like,
agreed.
They were still relatively interesting characters. Shawnee Smith as Amanda, great job. Happy to see her again. Charlie Clouser's score was amazing and probably has it's probably the best drop of the tune Hello Zep out of all these movies. Yeah. Like, the moment it dropped, I was like, oh fuck.
That is cool.
It's well, so I need good. To I need to watch the movies, which is
right.
Probably
I'll just end it by saying this film made being a fan of this franchise feel so rewarding, and I love when that happens.
So you, what you're saying is you hated it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Worst
couldn't
three
stand
eight.
It.
Not enough misogyny.
-3/10.
Oh God, that's terrible.
That's Exorcist 2.
Oh God, I don't even start Nexus 2 again. That was
I felt like I was like on drugs watching that film.
This sounds actually a good movie. X's 2, not so much.
Yeah, I've also been playing good things about Sonics.
Yeah, I also got an early birthday present from a friend. Actually, she's one of our like occasional hosts here. Ash got me Spider-Man 2.
Oh hell yeah! The movie or the game?
The game.
Oh, there we go.
Are you talking about the game that's based on the movie?
Well, the movie
no,
based
I'm talking
the game.
About the new game. I'm talking about the new game that incorporates elements of the movie Spider-Man 3.
Oh, so there's a dance scene.
Not quite, but it's the second game, even though technically it's the third game, because you had Spider-Man Miles Morales between the two.
This is fair. I actually have not played Spider-Man 2, despite the fact that Venom is my favorite characters, and I feel like I would love the hell of it.
So I'm still playing it, and because of that, and because I don't want to spoil either of you, I won't talk about the story. I'll just say it's so far it's been keeping my interest, and I'm really into what they were doing, especially with these particular iterations of these characters.
I love that, though. Like, I love how...
I agree. Yeah.
Don't be started on Spider-Man, because I will never shut up. But, like, I do love how Spider-Man is one of those characters who they can reinterpret in so many different ways, and it's always interesting. Like, that's not common for a lot of characters. Like, there's not a lot of characters where the applicability of, like, storytelling can be done to, where it's still compelling a dozen times later. But I love how the Insomnia series really just takes an angle of Spider-Man that we haven't seen yet in outside the comics and makes it so interesting and so fascinating. I love it.
Yeah.
I could talk endlessly about that.
But speaking from the gameplay perspective, if you liked the first one and Miles Morales, it's basically a better version of both those games. The gameplay is fantastic. I enjoy playing as both characters. Like, there's never a dull moment. There's never points where I dread having to switch to one character to do their thing. They're both a lot of fun to play as. Peter's especially great when, like, because if you've seen any bit of PR for this game, any bit of advertising, you know that the symbiote's involved and that incorporates into gameplay. And that's a lot of fun to utilize as someone who, as a kid, played the Spider-Man 3 movie game.
Oh my goodness.
And was disappointed of how the symbiote was handled there on a gameplay standpoint. This is what I wanted.
Are you implying that anything was good about Spider-Man 3 the game?
Yeah, I was gonna say Spider-Man 3 the game was fucking awful.
It was like such a terrible game. Like, I think Spider-Man 3 the movie's okay. I think it's better than most people say it is.
I love Spider-Man 3 the movie.
It's a lot of fun. I enjoy Spider-Man 3, but the game is just unplayable at points. Like, it's telling that the best bits of the game are where it just flops on its stomach, and you realize while playing it, you're gonna die. And then everything blows up.
But yeah, Spider-Man 2 is honestly, this game is honestly, with the symbiote stuff, feels like an honest-to-God do-over of that game, and I'm so happy. But playing as Miles is great. I love using invisibility for stealth, and his Venom moves are, once again, a fantastic addition. All the different costumes you can get for these characters are great. Like, there's different movie outfits that are wonderful, as well as different comic variants that are just wonderful. Yes, I'm going to be a nostalgic fuck and say I go for the Raimi suit. Thank you very much.
I haven't unlocked the Raimi suit yet, but I'm wearing the Amazing Spider-Man 2 suit.
Hell yes. I'm going to say Raimi.
I think the Raimi suit is not that great.
Get out. Anyway.
I never thought it was that great. Like, I thought it was good, but, like, I think the Amazing Spider-Man
suit. Well, I'm a nostalgic whore, okay? Let me have my Raimi suit.
You can have your Raimi suit. Don't take it away from me. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't compare, though.
Fuck you. Anyway, Raimi suit for Peter, Spider-Verse suit for Miles. That's how I go, so.
But is there the Batman suit, where you have the bag over your head in the Fantastic Four outfit?
Oh, fuck that. I know it's a joke, but it looks stupid and I hate it.
It's the best costume for Spider-Man. Nowhere else is there a more distinct Spider-Man costume than him putting a bag over his head, and that's it.
There's a lot of good and surprising returns from characters from both the first game as well as the Miles Morales game. Some you wouldn't even expect, honestly. Like, there's some characters who were, like, from specific side quests in those games where I was like, oh, they brought them back. That's cool. I like that.
Mm. Yeah. So far, I've noticed that it does benefit having played all of them, you know.
I'll say also the voice acting is very good. This is probably one of, if not my absolute voice performance I've heard from Yuri Lowenthal, who's always been one of my favorite actors. So I'm very happy that he's just completely, like, blowing minds with this performance. But everyone else is wonderful. I've only heard bits and pieces of Tony Todd as Venom, but I'll say from what I hear, goddamn pitch perfect casting.
Mm. Well, it's Tony Todd. There was never a question about that. He is.
Yeah, no. As soon as they announced he was going to be playing Venom, I knew that was a perfect choice. So I was he's like, again, I've only heard bits and pieces. I've only heard little bits of him at the point I am in the game, but he sounds amazing. So yeah,
I haven't even gotten to Venom, so I'm very curious.
So yeah, I still haven't finished it, but honestly, really good fucking game so far. I can't wait to see how it ends.
Yeah. I actually completely agree with you. I'm loving it. But I'm playing it, like, slowly so I can enjoy every second of it, you know? I don't want to, like, rush through it.
Yeah, I've been playing it with my roommate. Like, I've been tackling the Peter sections, and she's doing Miles, so.
That's fun.
But, like, if one of us is stuck on a part, we'll let the other try it, so I've gotten to experience a bit of Miles gameplay. Oh, also, the MJ sections aren't the Mary Jane sections aren't shit in this one. So there you go.
I love Mary Jane as a character, but those sections were rough in the first game.
No, they're actually fun in this version. They are honest to God fun.
Oh, I love it. That's fantastic. Like, because I love Mary Jane. I love her character, but those first sections were just like the gameplay, like you get this momentum in the game, and it'll just like hit a wall, and you just be like, "Well, now I gotta stay perfectly still and not touch the controllers or hide behind a wall as I wait for the next hour to get back to the game."
Yeah. Anywho, yeah. I think that might be a good place to wrap up bitching about Mary Jane.
I think so. We ended on a good note talking about Spider-Man 2. And with that being said, do you guys want to plug where people can find you?
Sure. You can find me under Lady Jazzington on Twitter. Same username on Blue Sky, if that happens to be more your thing. You can also find me at my website, jazzyolivervo.com. And when is this episode being posted?
As soon as I get a moment to do, so probably by Monday.
Okay, well, if this posts before somehow, against all odds, post before Saturday, if you're in the Louisville, Texas area, I will be I am going to be a guest at the Texas Object Show hangout, where a lot of stuff related to Inanimate Insanity, BFDI, and other object shows will be displayed, as well as I will be there signing shit and also potentially participating in a Q&A. I'm not entirely sure on that yet.
That is awesome.
Then I will try to get this out before then.
Okay.
Anthony, you wanna plug where people can find you?
You can find me on Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky, and various websites where I've written things, under the name AGRAMUGLIA, or under my full name, Anthony Grumulia. You can find me anywhere there. And usually I'm pretty loud, so you'll find me. You can also hear about my antics on several right-wing grifters. Like last night, apparently, I was told they were making fun of me there, so that works too. You can find me in any of those locations.
Fun.
Delightful,
and
right?
And you can follow me at Crystal W. Rocks on Twitter, and I'm also on Medium at Crystal Williams. Got a link tree on my Twitter account that you can click to. So, yeah, you can do the things over there. And until then, Thank you for listening to not only another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom podcast, but also an episode that is a finale of our mini-series on the Exorcist films. We did it. Jazzy, it's nice to have you back today, and we will all see you on the next episode when it's going to be more of a normal. But we will be doing future marathons, so just stay tuned for that. Until then, see you on the next
marathon, baby!
Bye, everybody.
Bye!